Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
The NFL's success of today is built a lot on the great play of individuals in the game, but it's also made on great contributors in their decisions to the game. We're going to talk a little bit about both of those in today's January 11th football history headlines, all coming up in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and I want to welcome you and thank you once again for joining us on the football history headlines on the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast. Today, we're going to embark on some great stories of the NFL's and NCAA's past in football history for the date of January 11th. And we'll start off with our first headline of January 11th, 1946. The NFL announces that Burt Bell had become the second commissioner in league history. The Pro Football Research Association, or the PFRA, in their 1996 Volume 18 edition of the Coffin Corner magazine, shared a story from the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website. The longtime inaugural commissioner, Elmer Layden's tenure was over due to an instance where Brooklyn owner Dan Topping withdrew his team from the league to join the newly formed All-America Football Conference, or AAFC. The remaining owners agreed not to renew Layden's league contract because they thought that he was soft and not forceful enough to prevent Brooklyn's departure. The AAFC, right after World War II, was a definite competitor to the NFL, as the AAFC had some deep pockets, as well as they gained some star power by getting some of the great players in the NFL after the war. The NFL franchise owners then unanimously picked one of their own, fellow owner Burt Bell, of the Pittsburgh Steelers co-owners, to take the position of league commissioner. For the first two decades of the NFL's existence, they had a president of the league. Jim Thorpe served as the president in 1920, followed by Joe Carr, who served as the head man for 19 seasons, and then Carl Stork, who was the final president, serving 2 years. In 1941, Layden was the first commissioner of the group as they moved away from the presidential title. Bell was one of the best the NFL had ever seen, and he dealt immediately with a gambling scandal at the championship game. We talked about that in one of our previous football history headlines. He wouldn't back down or sign any truces with the rival AAFC, and even instituted the two-minute warning and signed a great TV deal. The Bell's staunch position of not giving in to the AAFC eventually paid dividends, as he basically made the fledgling league go belly up, and then Bell swept in and grabbed the AAFC's three best teams to merge into the NFL, the Browns, the Colts, and the 49ers. Bell really put the NFL in a better place and even competed with the popular college game and gave them equal footing. He's a true legend and he should be remembered, and we'll talk about more about him on the February 25th edition of the Hall of Famers Birthdays. January 11, 1959, Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. The 9th annual NFL Pro Bowl game was played as the Eastern Conference got the better of the Western Conference in a final score 28-21. According to the American Football Database website, New York Giants halfback Frank Gifford and Doug Atkins, the defensive end from the Chicago Bears, were the game's most valuable players. January 11, 1970, at Tulane Stadium in New Orleans, Louisiana, Super Bowl IV had the Minnesota Vikings taking on the Kansas City Chiefs for the right to win the Lombardi Trophy, according to the ProFootballReference.com website. The Chiefs jumped out to a 16-0 halftime lead based on three Jon Stenerud field goals and a rushing TD by running back Mike Garrett. The teams exchanged touchdowns in the third quarter on a Vikings Dave Osborne plunge, and KC's Len Dawson's pass connection to Otis Taylor for a 46-yard touchdown. The Chiefs captured the NFL title by knocking off the Minnesota Vikings 23-7. The game's most valuable player was quarterback Len Dawson of KC. January 11, 1981, the AFC Championship game was played at San Diego's Jack Murphy Stadium. The AFC West dominated the American Conference of the NFL when the Chargers hosted the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders defeated the San Diego Chargers 34-27 to advance to the big game. On the NFC side, on the same day, January 11, 1981, at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, the NFC Championship game had the Philadelphia Eagles in a surprise beating the Dallas Cowboys 20-7. Head coach Dick Vermeil took the Eagles into the game on the arm of Ron Jaworski and Wilbert Montgomery and his fine rushing techniques, and Harold Carmichael, the great wide receiver, and it took them into this championship game of the NFL. January 11, 1987, Giant Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. The largest crowd, 76,633, of the NFL at New York Giants Stadium had the Giants defeating Washington 17-0 in the NFC Championship game, according to OnThisDay.com. That same day, January 11, 1987, at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, the AFC Championship will forever go down in the annals of sports history as the drive. According to SBNation.com, Cleveland fans were in an emotional high as the Browns scored on a touchdown with less than 6 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter on a 48-yard pass play from Bernie Kosar to receiver Brian Brennan, who with a spin move escaped would-be tacklers to find the end zone. Things looked even better for the Browns' frenzied crowd as Denver bobbled the ensuing kickoff and found themselves with possession at their own 2-yard line. The Broncos had not mustered a drive of any length all day against a stingy Cleveland defense, and that just added to the fever pitch of the home crowd. But a cool, calm, and collected John Elway had other things in mind. Elway and company drove the entire 98 yards of the field, including some third and long conversions, to tie the game and silence a crowd. The Broncos took the game into overtime, where Rich Carlisle's field goal defeated the Cleveland Browns' Super Bowl plans as the Broncos won 23-20 in the game called The Drive. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines, and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com, and you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
Now that's a podcast you won't want to miss. Now let's get back to our headlines. January 11, 1995, the Canadian Football League tried some experimental U.S. expansion by announcing Alabama's Birmingham Barracudas were granted a CFL franchise. Birmingham lasted only one season, though, per the OnThisDay.com website, as the states did not support the Canadian style of play. January 11, 1998, the AFC Championship game had Bill Cowher's Steelers up against a Denver Broncos team with Wiley veteran John Elway under center. Terrell Davis started scoring with an 8-yard scamper, according to the ProFootballReference.com website. Pittsburgh countered with a TD by their big back, Jerome Bettis. The Steelers' defense shut Elway and company down in the second half to make it an interesting down the stretch, but could not overcome a 3 interceptions by Cordell Stewart as the Denver Broncos went on to beat Pittsburgh 24-21 to advance into the big game. January 11, 1998, at 3Com Park in San Francisco, the NFC Championship game was won by the Green Bay Packers as they outlasted the San Francisco 49ers 23-10 to advance to the Super Bowl, per the OnThisDay.com website. January 11th, 1999. Coach Marty Schottenheimer resigned as the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs after 10 seasons. Schottenheimer had great success in the NFL as a head coach, not only with the Chiefs, but also with the Cleveland Browns a decade earlier. CBSNews.com tells how Marty's teams played well in a regular season, but his failures in the playoffs led to many disappointments to the Chiefs and Browns fans. It's a shame that he's remembered for his failures and not for the tremendous success his teams had. His 145 victories had him at the time ranked 10th in NFL history. January 11, 2004, the Philadelphia Eagles faced 4th and 26 as they trailed the Green Bay Packers by 3 in the NFC Divisional Playoff game. An ESPN.com story informs us that the final drives for the Eagles, the game all came down to this one play with 1:12 remaining. Yes, 4th and 26. Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb launched a remarkable 28-yard strike to Freddie Mitchell on to move the sticks and keeps Philly's chances alive. The Eagles would go on to score on a David Akers field goal to tie the game at 17 and send the game into an extra sudden-death session. The Packers had their chance in overtime as they had the ball, but an errant Brett Favre pass was picked off by a ball-hawking safety Brian Dawkins to set up the game-ending field goal by Akers in a 20-17 Eagles win. McNabb set postseason quarterback rushing record with his 107 yards on the ground. January 11, 2016, at the University of Phoenix Stadium. The second college football playoff national championship game had the top teams in college football face each other as the Crimson Tide of Alabama challenged the Clemson Tigers. The college football playoff website covers the game's storyline well. Clemson signal caller, the phenomenal Deshaun Watson, set a championship game record of 478 total yards, but the Tide countered with offensive production by Derrick Henry, who trudged for 158 yards on the ground, and O.J. Howard, who caught yardage of 208 yards of passes on 5 receptions and 2 scores. It was a game for the ages, as number 2 Alabama outlasted number 1 Clemson 45-40. The Tide's O.J. Howard was the offensive player of the game, while Bama's Eddie Jackson was the defensive player of the game. It's that time again to talk about our Hall of Famers and birthdays on January 11th, and we'll start off in the year 1895 in Evanston, Illinois. Northwestern quarterback Patty Driscoll was born. In 1916, Driscoll earned All-America honors with the Wildcats. Besides Northwestern, Patty also played for the Great Lakes Naval Station team in 1918, just after World War I was concluded, according to the NFF website. Driscoll had an amazing performance in the 1919 Rose Bowl as the Great Lakes team faced the Mare Island Marine Base. Patty, nicknamed the Wasp, was everywhere on the field, as the stat sheets show for the Great Lakes. He caught a touchdown pass, drop-kicked a 30-yard field goal, and threw a touchdown pass to the legendary George Halas. Yes, that George Halas that went on to own and coach the Chicago Bears. Great Lakes cruised to a Rose Bowl victory 17-0. The National Football Foundation placed Patty Driscoll into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1974. Out of college, Patty signed with the NFL with the Chicago Cardinals, where in 1923 he scored 27 points in one game. He also gained acclaim by successfully kicking a 50-yard drop-kick field goal in the 1924 season. In 1926, his rights were sold to the Chicago Bears to prevent Patty from going into the rival AFL Professional League. He played a total of 11 seasons in the NFL and made it on the All-Pro team 6 times. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Patty Driscoll in the year 1965. January 11, 1973, Great Falls, Montana. Dave Dickinson, the great quarterback from the University of Montana, arrived into this life. The National Football Foundation states that Dickinson is the Grizzlies' all-time leading passer and still holds 28 of the school's records. Dave was a 2-time first-team All-American. He won the 1995 Walter Payton Award as a top player in the FCS, and Dickinson led Montana to the FCS national title that year. Dave Dickinson was voted in as the College Football Hall of Fame in 2018. After college, Dave played professionally, most notably in the CFL with the Calgary Stampeders and the BC Lions. In 2015, Dickinson was honored by being inducted in the CFL Hall of Fame. He was the league's MVP in 2000, and he won 3 Grey Cups, 1998, 2006, and 2008, according to the NFF. Dickinson had some time in the NFL, too, as in 2001 and 2002, he had a cup of coffee with the San Diego Chargers, Seattle Seahawks, Miami Dolphins, and the Detroit Lions. We want to thank you kindly once again for joining us for this episode of the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, and we hope that you'll join us tomorrow for January 12th's great episode that we're going to have planned for you as we talk about some more great headlines and some more Hall of Fame birthdays. You can also make sure you check us out as soon as that gets released by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast player or going to your podcast provider and making sure you subscribe there to this great podcast. But you can also go to pigskindispatch.com and see what we're talking about in writing or listen to the podcast there. Or you can go to the sportshistorynetwork.com where you can find this podcast and many other great podcasts who have some excellent things to say about sports history, as well as some very talented and engaging guests. That's the sportshistorynetwork.com. And we'll see you tomorrow, folks. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Just another ordinary day in the offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where did you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so retro it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can too by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's ROW number one today for access to the full Row One catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.